Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the VIP Ignite podcast. I'm your host, Deneen White. Today, I am so excited to introduce you to Nathaniel Sellin. We met Nathaniel a couple weeks ago when we were in Los Angeles. He is a sound engineer at the Rattle Room, and I cannot wait for him to share his story with you. Hi, Nathaniel. How are you today?
Hello, Deneen. I'm well. It's a beautiful day in Los Angeles, much cooler than it has been, blustery, a little noisy, but, you know, that's Los Angeles.
Just another day in L.A., huh?
I suppose so, as much as one can have just other days here. Things always seem to be moving unpredictably.
That is true.
Here we are again, though. Not quite another day, as I'm now a featured guest on our venerated podcast, VIP Ignite, and what a pleasure it is.
Venerated. Wow. No one's ever said that my podcast was venerated before. Thank you so much, Nathaniel. I appreciate that.
Well, you know.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. So this is probably going to be the fastest 30 minutes of your whole entire day. So can you start by introducing yourself to my audience?
Yeah, sure. So I am Nathaniel Sellin. I am 28 years old, and I had grown up in Los Angeles, California, playing music in a musical family. I am very fortunate to have been born into a family of musicians who are, my mother's a harpist and my father's a multi-instrumentalist, and together they have a band, and they play traditional English country folk music, and also some Dutch music, and so I've been steeped in old musical traditions. And then when I was about 12 or 13 years old, I decided that I wanted to play jazz. And I saw a concert at the Hollywood Bowl of Benny Goodman's Sing, 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 as played by the orchestra. And they had like eight double basses come out in front and play these lines. And on all of the rests, the stops in the music, they would spin their basses in perfect synchrony. Synchronous. I decided that is the instrument for me. I have to be able to do that because I'd never seen anything quite so cool. And 6 months later, I was enrolled in an arts charter school, a middle school that provided private bass lessons. They started the bass program around me. Initially, it was going to be violin, viola, and cello. And then I thought, well, you know, I really don't want to do any of that. Bass for me, please. And it was a funny thing. They didn't have an in-house bass teacher, but they thought it was such a good idea that they sourced the bass teacher from one of the math teachers. You see, the school's instructional staff was populated by mostly CalArts students at that time. And you don't have to go very far in CalArts to find some very, very capable musicians. And the math teacher was a percussion major who had a roommate who was Charlie Hayden's pupil. And so I got to study with a brilliant player from a very young age, and his name is Evan Conway. And I had about 8 years of private bass lessons. And also, the school also got their act together and hired an in-house bass teacher, but that wasn't until, like, I think the second year. So, I was the only bass player for some time in the school. But, I had many years of private instruction and instruction through the institution. And then when I graduated high school, I thought, well, this is good. I'll keep on going. So I attended the Colburn's Conservatory for their jazz lab band, which is a very capable band led under a musician whose name is Lee Seacard, and he's a wealth of knowledge and is a brilliant band director. And as such, I got into the particulars of advanced compositional and improvisational techniques for jazz. And then my tenure there ended, and I went on to really get into something completely different, which was emergency medicine, and sort of a almost a 180. My father has always had a relationship where he loves it and he's extremely good at it, but it's not what he does. It's not his living. And I wanted to emulate that. I've known too many musicians who are absolutely brilliant, who aren't making it, aren't making any money. And, and I wanted more security than that. So, I thought I'll get a trade. I'll find something that works well for me. And I have always had initiative. And I've had an occasion where I needed to act, or someone was going to die. She had slipped on some train tracks, and there was a train coming. And I thought, if I don't move now, this woman is going to get smushed. And so I did, and things were okay. But I figured, if I'm going to react like that, I have to get trained. So this course from there really led me to work on ambulances and decide that I was going to become a paramedic and do all of this stuff. And, you know, I have this whole second career going. I'm applying to nursing schools right now. But really, it wasn't until I found audio engineering I realized, aha, you don't have to be so reliant upon like luck and the goodwill of others in order to be successful in the music industry. You just have to find your own path. You just have to find your own place to be. And for me, being a player was always a thing that I could do, but it never, I didn't have the same need to go and perform and be out, and I was a little bit nervous about that. And then I realized that there are many aspects of audio engineering which sort of allow you to circumnavigate that whole rigmarole, you are not beholden to the same kinds of standards and restrictions that active performing musicians are. It's much easier to find a job because really the aspects of audio engineering are much different than being a musician. You are so much more service oriented than performance oriented. And with the experience I developed doing ambulance work, that was an extremely easy thing for me to glean in a musical context, because all of a sudden, here's this thing where I am a support staff to this greater goal. That was a role that had been easy for me to fill, or at least one I had learned. And so all of a sudden to reorient, to become an audio engineer, to support the performance of musicians using the foundation as that's the blend. That's the ideal blend that I have found that really works for the kind of musician that I am. I would say that a lot of really good audio engineers are also really good musicians. You don't always have to be. And in fact, Prince's audio engineer, the woman who did all of his tracking, I think, or at least the vast majority of it, didn't play a lick of music. She has a very different path. She got into it because she was a repair technician at an audio hardware company, and she just got into reading electronic manuals and then was like, oh my gosh, you know, here are all of these things that I know how to manipulate signal within the analog to the nth degree. I guess I can probably be an audio engineer. And she realized she had good ears. So there are many paths to being a musician, to being an audio engineer, I guess to being someone in the industry, but mine was to have a foundation of music, to leave it, and then to come back realizing that I had skills that culminated towards this particular relationship within the music industry. And so that's sort of my story. The 30,000-foot flyby.
I mean, first of all, I didn't realize I was talking to a hero. There's so much I can unpack, but the first thing is, like, You literally, you're like, yeah, this, that. I saved a person's life. She was like, was laying on some train tracks, almost got run over. And then I was like, wow. So I had no idea that you were a hero, first of all, Nathaniel. So that, I mean, that's
well,
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
an odd thing.
Yeah. And, like, behind every good musician, behind every good concert, there's always a sound engineer because, like you and I talked on when we were doing the pre-interview for the podcast, like, when I was younger, I was very heavily involved in church, and I was never allowed to touch the board. I was allowed to, like, turn the one microphone up if they really needed me to, but I wasn't allowed to. But it's amazing people think, oh, yeah, this is – people have no idea – the manipulation it takes to make these musicians, to make musicians sound good, especially with the way that music is today, because it's all so heavily produced. Like there are very few times that you listen to music and you actually hear like the pure music, like nearly everything is produced. So I love that what you said was that you found a way to, you're an excellent musician, but you also found a way to be like, the person who makes other musicians sound good. That's a really cool thing.
Yeah. And you know, it's a funny thing to have decided that that is what one has to do. Also, I think part of my matriculation to becoming a sound engineer was realizing that I have sensitive enough ears to be able to make those kinds of decisions on other musicians' behalf. And There's a funny sort of disconnect. What I mean to say is there's a certain amount of support staff, as a bass player, you tend to be a support musician. You tend not to make decisions on the behalf of the band, you know, unless you're taking a solo or unless the arrangement really calls for it. But that tends not to be up to the bass player. And so to then go and sort of reorient the only support ever mentality to being able to say, I know what serves this sound is sort of almost a reinterpretation of that role. And for me, it felt almost egotistical because, like, what do I know? But, you know, then to realize that there is all sorts of that skill as a support musician is just applicable. You just have to have the right ears. That made it also relatively easy to step into. I mean, but the right ears being relevant or relative, right? Because different people know how to listen to different things. And that's sort of where my skill really comes into play, because I've spent so much time having been steeped in both folk and jazz music as I was growing up. Those are the kinds of things that I tend to have sensitivity towards. Granted, you know, now there are all kinds of different options that one can take as an engineer or as a producer. Because the internet has made the world seemingly limitless in terms of the kinds of exposure to different kinds of musics that we can have. But there you have it.
That's awesome. So the studio that you work in, the way that we met you was because we were in the studio. Unfortunately, I wasn't actually in there, but I say the ubiquitous we. But you were in the studio when Michael and Alicia had the opportunity to meet and interview Bob Leone for the evening. And so I guess if I can be a little bit of a fangirl for a second, like working in a studio like that, have you had the opportunity to work with some big names in the music industry? You don't have to drop names or anything like that, because I'm sure that's kind of like a breach of confidence or something like that. But what is it like working in that type of environment where you get to not only work with up-and-coming artists, because I'm sure there are a lot of up-and-coming artists, but also with bigger names? Like, what is it like to be a support system for names that we all know?
It's really interesting. It's a fascinating thing to learn how to let your ego be fluid enough to account for what every one of those musicians needs.
Okay.
Because they're all going to come into the room with a different idea of who you are and what this space is going to be and what they're going to ask of you. And when you're working with brilliant, brilliant artists, it's a matter of the, trying to be fluid as possible with regard to the message of their music. It took me a while to sort of stop being starstruck. And then there were a couple of moments where, like, a person who I didn't recognize, I didn't know who they are, and then I heard their name, and I went, oh. And sort of I tricked myself into, like, being comfortable because I didn't realize that, you know, whoever this player was in the room until after I had heard their name. And it, from there, it was like, oh, I've already established, like, this baseline where I'm not operating from the standpoint of being starstruck. And I had to have that happen to me, like, once, maybe twice, before I was able to, like, be able to have this level of comfort with musicians. And also, when you are the engineer on a session, you also have to realize that you have a fair amount of power artistically in your own regard, and that creating that sound is a respect thing. So as I sort of came into my own and found my own feet and realized that these are just people, still the fluidity of serving them remains, but realizing that you have power and have your side of the equation in order to represent what they're trying to do artistically is just as valid. That's sort of the trick. Accidentally realizing who a person is and then not reacting, and then realizing that you're there and just, like, ride the non-reaction into, like, a dialogue, right? It's happened.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense, because I know, excuse me, with what I do with the podcast, sometimes I'm given a name, like, okay, call this person, like, oh, okay, and then, like, I find out who the person is, I'm calling, and like, whoa, hold on 1 second. What? Are you sure? Like, are you sure you want me to talk to that person? But it's like, it's so cool because when you're in a, if you're, like, you and I talked about this offline too, when you are someone who is a really good, I call us number twos, when you're someone who's a really good number two, you realize that your job is to make the number one look good. And yeah. I think it takes a certain personality to do that, because let's be honest, like, there's not a lot of glitz and glam when it comes to being a sound engineer or being a number two, or like with everything that you, like, you talked about being an EMT and now you're applying to nursing school. So I think that speaks a lot to who you are as a person, because what people don't realize is, and this seems to be a theme of my podcasting day today, is that there are so many different ways to get into the entertainment industry. And everyone wants to be the rock star. Everybody wants to be the one who's singing the song or playing the lead guitar or doing, like, all of those types of things. But what I've, like, this is, like, literally the theme of my day today for the podcast and all the things I'm doing is, it's like the whole entertainment industry is like this orchestra. And, like, if you are missing one piece of the orchestra, then the whole thing falls flat. So for me, it's really exciting to talk to you and hear about your journey as a sound engineer, because literally, like, very, very, very literally, if you weren't there mixing the sound and making sure that everything was balanced and that, like, all the channels were right and, like, everything was in balance, like, a lot of the music that we hear would fall flat. It wouldn't be the same. So can you talk a little bit about, I don't know that a lot of my audience really knows what it means to be a sound engineer. So can you kind of tell us a little bit about what it is that you do as a sound engineer?
Absolutely. I encounter, so I guess the first thing is, if I have a record date, or whatever it is, usually I have a fair amount of a notice, not always, sometimes it's like 24 hours and then you're in, but when that happens, I'll think, this musician has a body of work. The first thing to do is to look up that musician on whatever platform that they have and sift through their music to find sort of the general thematic production decisions that were made by previous engineers and that this musician signed off on in order to have an idea of how to orient your ear to what this musician is going to want to do on your date. And that's knowing if you have a more aggressive sound, being intimately familiar for whatever kind of a sound it is, being intimately familiar with your own equipment and with the equipment that you have at your command in order to accentuate the aspects that are of that sound that are more important. For instance, if you want a really smooth acoustic guitar sound, you use a twin channel TSL-4. If you want really huge aggressive vocals, you use a retro style leveler. If you want something, a really bright, shiny acoustic sound or a bright, shiny vocal sound, LA-3As, because those are known as bright compressors. I guess what I'm getting to is knowing the music that you're going to be working on or having an idea of what that's going to sound like and then making decisions about what kind of equipment supports that sound and then using the culmination of microphones and compressors and preamps and gates and, the equipment. With the musician in the room, in the booth, and with the producer trying things out, sometimes it's not always a clear path. There's not always an obvious answer. It's a matter of being able to advise the musician what kind of processing is going to achieve what they like, whether that be by analog hardware or digital hardware. So I organize a signal path for every one of the aspects of that sound that wants to be produced, knowing what that character wants to be, how it wants to feel, where it wants to sit, if it's heavy, if it's light, if it's close, if it's far away, if it's up or it's down, and that is within both the stereo picture, so where it sits in your perception of the audiological field in order to bring out different characters of that element, and also within the frequency range, knowing that there are sort of frequency tropes that one tends to adhere to, and knowing how to listen for different frequency groups and knowing how to listen, basically doing EQing to bring out the important elements of that track in reference to everything else that's happening with the music, keeping the low end nice and free in order to make it so that you have elements that are like, bass drums and bass guitars and percussive elements, keeping those available and open to have a relationship with one another and knowing where you want information in the mid-range to be present and what you want most featured there, because oftentimes some of the most important elements that we have in terms of being able to find clarity in a mix is in the low mid and mid mid relationships of different when I say like low mid and mid mid and low end, I'm talking about like 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. Those are the frequencies that we hear and use in order to make decisions about what needs to be where. It's a matter of keeping your mixed your tracking balanced enough so that if you are doing the mixing or if someone else is doing the mixing, they have a raw palette that is clean and clear so that there can be decisions made. Because also what you do as an engineer is you realize what process comes after your thumbprint on the music. If you're only doing the tracking, it depends on the artist and it depends on... Even through like high quality analog gear, one of the things that you'll tend to do is just record everything completely flat. This is case by case, but in order to make it so that there can be elements of that accentuation, you leave it alone. Leave it alone and track and just get good sounds without necessarily any cue characteristics, just preamp saturation and maybe compression, depending on how involved the in-the-box mixing is going to be at the work. And when I say in-the-box, I mean digital, because the whole world is becoming more digital. And so knowing sort of what kind of plugins, which are basically digital units in order to manipulate sound, knowing what kinds of plugins are prominent in what kinds of genres and what the musician is going to tend to do will inform you as to how much you need to tweak a thing that you are tracking. I guess what it's really coming down to is being able to use your ears in order to make spatial decisions about real time, using the equipment that you know intimately well, so as to achieve a result that can be presented either to whoever comes next to the chain or to be able to do mixing in the room, whatever it is. It's knowing how to manipulate sound in order to achieve the ultimate goal of that music. And that is incredibly varied, which is kind of what makes this a real pleasure, because you don't quite know what's going to be happening day in, day out. I mean, you have an idea and you do your homework in order to make it so that you know what to look for in a sound, but I don't know who's going to walk in through the door. There have been sessions where I've been totally surprised by the capability of, you know, this up-and-coming nobody, this person, I had no idea who they were, and you know, you're totally blown away by this musician's capability. And that's also one of the great pleasures is finding brilliant musicians who you love. So that's really cool. That tends to be about what audio engineering really is.
So in layman's terms, what I heard was basically you're the conductor of a digital orchestra. So what you do is, like, you take the music that comes in and you basically orchestrate how it goes back out. I was sitting here, I was trying to follow all of the technical terms, and I was like, but I don't know if I'm describing it correctly, but that kind of sounds like what you do. Like, you have to figure out, like, what sounds right and what needs to be high, what needs to be low, and you're basically the conductor of an orchestra.
I would say, yeah, a conductor fills a similar role in that there are artistic decisions to be made about the sonic output of a collection of musicians. And I suppose, in a way, an audio engineer is not totally dissimilar. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for describing a different facet of the entertainment industry to us. sorry. And I told you at the beginning that this is like the fastest 30 minutes of our day. I love everything that you said. The way that you described what you do, I've always known it was artistic, but the picture that you painted was absolutely beautiful. So thank you very much for sharing what you do and your passion for sound engineering and for music as well with us. I really do appreciate that.
Sure. Thank you very much for what you do in order to provide different people really different perspectives, because I didn't know that I wanted to do what I am doing now until I sort of realized that I had a skill set and encountered it. And, you know, perhaps an individual listening to one of your podcasts will have a comparable realization catalyzed by what you do. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure that one of the things that I like to do on the podcast is to give people different perspectives on different things that they can do that maybe it's not, again, like I said, not being like the lead guitarist or the singer of a band, but like just to show them that there are so many different parts and different facets to the whole entertainment industry. So again, thank you so much for sharing your passion. And I hope I truly believe that someone's going to listen to this and be like, wow, that sounds amazing. I need to do what Nathan does. So thank you so much for the way that you described it. And just thank you so much for your passion. It was amazing to hear everything that you said.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess my if I could offer a parting word, everyone is reachable. Everyone is reachable. You can the internet knows no bounds. YouTube Academy is real, but also trust yourself and ask questions, and don't be afraid to ask questions to people who you might think wouldn't want to answer them, because sometimes when you do ask that question, you're bold enough to do it, it opens an entire world of opportunity. And,
yeah,
you know, part of what happened with
definitely.
Me. So
yeah, because someone gave you the opportunity and taught you, and that's how you are where you are now, correct?
Well, in a sense, I was enough to ask a person to have to a studio, and then I decided that pushing all of the buttons was okay. Noted only after I've read all of the manuals for all of these things. But that's, starting as an intern and being bold enough to make those kinds of decisions on my own behalf, almost without supervision. And it just started when I asked the right question. And then my intuition and my nature and my ability as a musician came through. And if you have half of what I've got, you can do it too.
That's awesome. Well, they're very encouraging parting words. Thank you so much. Thank you so much again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Deneen, what a pleasure.
Excellent. You have a great day.
And you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. I'd like to thank everyone so much for taking the time to listen to the VIP Ignite podcast. If you enjoyed my conversation with Nathaniel, please make sure that you hit subscribe to the VIP Ignite podcast, because I have a lot more amazing guests coming up over the next couple of weeks for you to listen to. And if you are interested in learning how to become an actor, a model, or a musician, please visit our website at ammsociety.com, where you can get registered for our next live webinar. Thank you so much and have a great day.